Breaking tonight, Pfizer announces it's shutting down its Durham and Morrisville plants. What went into the decision and how the company is taking care of the employees being let go. Then, a couple from Chapel Hill, one of more than 200 Hamas hostages. We speak to close friends who are holding out hope for their safe return.
I'm timing out the big warm-up before the big cool-down. And we're trending wetter for Halloween. What to expect for trick-or-treat time.
We begin with breaking news. Two Pfizer plants in the Triangle are closing. The company confirmed that to WREL earlier this evening. Thanks for joining us. I'm Ashley Rowe.
And I'm Dan Haggerty. Sky 5 flying over both plants today. This is the Durham plant here, the Morrisville plant here on my left. The big question tonight, how many people will be getting their pink slips? WREL's Aaron Thomas is live in Morrisville working to get that answer.
Yeah, Dan, that's something, a question that we have yet to get answered about this specific number of impacted employees. What we can say with facilities here in Morrisville as well as others in Durham, those two that are impacted, this company, this pharmaceutical giant, employs about 4,000 people here in the Tar Heel State. We'll show you some more video of what Sky 5 captured this evening of both facilities in Durham and Morrisville. The Durham location actually opened in December of 2021 with a focus on making clinical supplies for gene therapy, and the Morrisville location where I am live tonight focuses on preclinical programs. It is worth pointing out that the locations in both Sanford and Rocky Mount are the two largest in the state of North Carolina. They will not close. As for impacts to the workers, Pfizer in a statement shared the following, quote, "All job-related decisions will be made with transparency, compassion, and respect in compliance with applicable laws." Within the past 30 minutes, I just wrapped up an interview with Durham's Mayor Pro Tem Mark Anthony Middleton. He shared with me the impact of these jobs being lost, and not only Durham, but the region as a whole.
This is reflective of an internal business decision by Pfizer. This is not an editorial on the market here in the Triangle in Durham. Of course, we lament the loss of any jobs. But one of the things that the Triangle faces is not a lack of jobs. It's actually a lack of people and sometimes a lack of skill sets to do the type of jobs that are coming to the Triangle.
Now, certainly a lot to unpack here with such a large pharmaceutical giant that has a large impact here in the Tar Heel State as well as the RTP area. We'll be following this on our late news, and you'll hear from these city and town leaders on why they will keep a positive outlook. Dan?
Yeah, it's going to be tough for a lot of families to feel that way, especially initially here. Tough news to hear for those folks. Aaron, thank you.
A wanted suspect is now in custody after barricading himself in a home for nearly 6 hours this morning. He's charged with murdering Crystal Loughran on October 17th. WREL's Carly Haynes describes the moment he eventually surrendered to police. Carly?
We're here on Mesa Drive in Fayetteville. Now, the scene is now clear. You can see the street empty of police cars. But this home at one point down the street, it was surrounded by crime tape and police cars as they tried to negotiate with a barricaded suspect. WREL's cameras were rolling when the suspect was taken out of the house and arrested. Fayetteville police say this happened peacefully. The suspect, identified by police as 28-year-old Raekwon Carlisle. Police say they tried to arrest him when Carlisle barricaded himself in his home. That happened at about 6:15 this morning. Carlisle was taken into custody for first-degree murder. He spoke to his cousin earlier today, who said he has a history of mental health issues. She talked about what it was like to wait for him to come out of the home.
We've all over here praying, talking to our ancestors, like, just come outside. You know what I'm saying? Just do the right thing and come out here. We got you. We ain't gonna let you sit in there and rot. Like, you know what I'm saying? We're gonna take the steps that we need to get you the help that you need. We're not gonna let them hurt you.
Carlisle is charged with murdering Crystal Loughran. She was just 40 years old when her body was discovered along Fieldcrest Street and Cedric Street on October 11th. But once again, the events earlier today lasted nearly 6 hours. Back to you.
Carly Haynes, live in Fayetteville. Thank you.
A big development. We've learned a Chapel Hill native and his wife are among the 200 or so hostages taken by Hamas. WRL's Chelsea Donovan has more.
The rabbi from this synagogue here in Raleigh and others in the Triangle will soon head to Israel to meet with families impacted by the conflict. One of those is the Spiegel family. Keith is a Chapel Hill native. He and his wife are being held hostage by Hamas, and friends and family are praying for their safe return home. Above Keith Siegel's smiling face, the word kidnapped. The Chapel Hill native and his wife, Aviva, were taken from their home, according to family and friends, sometime around October 7th.
Keith was about as gentle-spirited and decent a guy as you've ever met in North Carolina. Really a very kind person.
Alon Tao grew up with Siegel and his family in the Durham Chapel Hill area. Tao also lives in Israel, but about an hour north of Keith, his wife, and family.
I haven't heard anybody in all my years say one word that isn't just completely complimentary about him. My parents spoke with him last month. I mean, it's family friendship.
4 decades ago, Keith Siegel and his wife moved to Israel to start a family. They had 3 children and lived on a kibbutz called Kfar Azah. This is video of that kibbutz. Men, women, and children have been murdered in their own homes. It's one of the hardest hit areas.
One fine Saturday, 3 weeks ago, he was abducted violently and taken hostage to Gaza. Before he knew it, it was probably just hundreds of terrorists swarming his kibbutz, Kfar Azah. It's on the Gaza border.
The Siegels have now been missing for about 20 days.
And I'm sure he faced fear and horror and I'm afraid also physical abuse at the hands of these diabolical terrorists.
An estimated 220 hostages are still being held by Hamas after that initial October 7th attack. Tal is holding out hope that Keith and his wife will soon be released.
I look forward to seeing him again soon. I hope.
Senator Ted Budd revealed this week that he had a meeting with families of those hostages. He emphasized the necessity of suspending humanitarian aid to Gaza until every single hostage is returned back home. Chelsea Donovan, WRAL News, Raleigh.
Just absolutely terrifying. We just pray that they are going to get out and get home safely. Officials in Maine have lifted a shelter-in-place order as they search for the suspect in the Lewiston massacre. Investigators recovered a cell phone belonging to the suspect and a note left behind. Police think 40-year-old Robert Card did not expect to be alive when the note was found. Police are investigating a motive and focusing resources on searching waterways near where they found Card's car. At last report, 18 people are dead, 13 have been injured. The Sampson County Sheriff's Office says they are looking at possibly more than one person of interest in the shooting that killed 5 people in a home on Garland Highway. Investigators identified the victims. They are Alfonso Jeffers, Dagoberto Lopez, Hector Salazar Lopez, Lamar Williams, and Jamie Rowland. The sheriff told WRAL this was targeted and the home is a known drug house.
There are more than 100 of these life-size figures in this Halloween display, and even some like this 12-foot skeleton here that are larger than life. The owner of all of this says that those thieves got away with about $3,000 worth of decorations in this Halloween heist.
Attorney Jesse Jones puts together this display outside his home on the corner of Oakwood Avenue and East Street in Raleigh. He says after midnight, someone stole these 4 clowns, including a custom-made one and an animatronic Jason from Friday the 13th.
They targeted and took the good stuff. They didn't leave. They didn't mess with the stuff that was cheaper. They took the high-end stuff, so they knew what they were doing.
WRAL has learned at least one other house in the neighborhood had Halloween decorations stolen. A neighbor posted this Ring security video online showing a thief leap over a gate and steal a mannequin from a front porch display.
Jones says in 12 years of putting this display together, he's never had an incident like this. Matt Tallhelm, WRAL News, Raleigh.
Big changes in the new congressional voting maps will likely change who represents Wake County. District 13 used to be the southern half of Wake County, Johnston County, and parts of Harnett and Wayne. It was a swing district. Either party could win it, and Democrat Wiley Nickel did. And this is the 13th district now, hooking around the edge of Wake County all the way up to the Virginia line. It now leans Republican by an 18-point margin. Nickel hasn't decided whether he'll run again or not, but he says it's not a fair fight.
There's no Democrat that's ever won for a race for Congress in the last 4 cycles anywhere near a district like this.
Nickel is hoping the courts will step in and force lawmakers to redraw the congressional map. Democrats say they're planning to file a lawsuit to block it, though no suit has been filed, at least not yet. The Biden administration plans to announce an executive order about artificial intelligence.
Coming up, we'll speak with two Duke experts about the plan. One on the concerns about AI in society. The other about the challenges of regulating this new and rapidly evolving technology. Plus,
this beautiful 79-acre lake is about to become part of the North Carolina park system. Find out when you can go visit and the emotional story behind the landowner who wanted to conserve it up next.
And we've got some big weather changes on the way coming up. I'll have a closer look at our latest thoughts on Halloween and those falling temperatures and the rain chances on the way.
On Monday, the White House plans to unveil a sweeping executive order on artificial intelligence. It marks the federal government's latest step towards regulating AI. We spoke with Duke Professor of Computer Science and AI scholar and researcher Cynthia Rudin. She says this executive order will likely not tackle some of her greatest concerns about the technology.
My wish list starts with biometric technologies. I really think that we should regulate access to large biometric data sets, because I don't think anybody should be able to clone your voice and make it sound like you are saying things that you don't. I'm also very concerned about facial recognition technology being used by people who do not know how to use it, and they can use it to control people. They use it to control access to things.
The timing is interesting here. This order will come 2 days before government leaders, Silicon Valley executives, and others gather in Britain for a world summit about the potential risks of AI. Joining us now from the nation's capital is Lee Tiedrich, a legal and ethical tech expert with Duke University. Thank you so much for being here with us tonight.
My pleasure, Ashley. Thank you for having me.
Lee, the Washington Post is reporting that President Biden's executive order will try to keep tech workers in the U.S. and more notably regulate how federal entities use AI.
Yes.
How hard is it to regulate AI?
It's very hard because the technology right now has evolved so much faster than the laws, and the laws are struggling to catch up. So, you know, part of it is policymakers need to learn about how the technology works, and the technology keeps moving so quickly. So, for example, a year ago when we were focusing on AI regulation and Europe has been out ahead of us, people weren't really focused on ChatGPT. So now the laws and regulations are trying to catch up to the technology. So it's finding a pathway that has regulations that can endure, but also are flexible enough to adapt to new technological developments, which inevitably are going to happen.
Right, and happen rapidly.
Yes.
Given your expertise in both law and ethics, I'm curious to get your take on how important you think it is that we do regulate AI.
I think it's important. I mean, I think at the 64,000 foot level, you know, AI has a lot of benefits. You know, a lot of my work through Global Partnership on AI, through the OECD, you know, AI has the potential to help expand healthcare. It has the potential to help us address the climate crisis. So we want to be able to capitalize on the benefits. But like as Dr. Rudin pointed out, you know, if we keep AI unchecked, there's also a lot of harms and risks. So I think it is important for governments to come up with frameworks that enable society to capitalize on those benefits and prevent some of the risks, like, for example, using voice cloning technology in a way that violates somebody's rights or is deceptive or leads to illegal behavior.
Really quick, we just have a couple of seconds left, but I just am curious to know what you think. Will there just be a ton of legal precedents, landmark cases, all these court battles that are going to come out of this?
No, I think what we're going to see initially, I mean, courts are slow. So I think what we're going to see initially is the government's going to exercise its power of the purse. You know, when it buys AI from companies through the government contracting process, the suppliers are going to have to comply with certain requirements, and there'll be technical requirements. And that will have a trickle-down effect through the economy, because it's the prime contractors to the government, it's people all the way down the supply chain, and then even people who aren't supplying to the government, you know, those standards will set norms that other companies will adopt to. So I think that's what we're going to see in the short run. We're already seeing a lot of legal cases. Courts tend to be slow. I think those will continue, but hopefully with some of these measures in line, we'll address some of the harms, and there'll be less litigation.
Lee Tiedrich, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Today, the state celebrated a new addition to the state park system, more than 1,000 acres surrounding a large natural lake in Bladen County. WRL's Liz McLaughlin introduces us to the family who made it possible.
It's a special day.
A ceremonial goodbye for Dr. Clemuel Johnson.
It's just been a major part of my life for 41 years.
As he passed the torch of ownership to the state of nearly 1,200 acres surrounding Baker's Lake, the quest to conserve that land inspired by his late wife, Nancy.
But I do wish that Nancy could be here with us.
They were married for 65 years and lived with their family at the lake for 15 of those, developing a fond appreciation for the habitat it provides for wildlife.
The birds, she especially enjoyed the birds.
Now it's one of the state's protected natural areas.
We're a rapidly growing state, and so we need more and more places preserved forever.
And this Carolina Bay Lake contains rare geological features that provide environmental benefits.
This acidic sand, the muck and peat that line these shorelines are part of what make it such a unique ecosystem and why it's so important to protect. It's called a Pocosin wetland, and it actually helps improve water quality, and it's a carbon sink, so it can store carbon, nitrogen, even mercury.
The natural area will be open to the public for activities such as paddling and hiking. But State Parks Director Brian Strong says conservation is the primary goal.
For me, it's really exciting to be able to as a state, to be able to take something that an individual cherished, took care of, and then for us to steward that for perpetuity.
A dream come true for Dr. Johnson.
We learned to love it, and we believe that the citizens of North Carolina will do the same.
Tears of joy, knowing this special place will be preserved for generations to come.
Yeah.
Liz McLaughlin, WRAL News.
And the state says they plan to have the trails in public access in the next couple of years, about three or so, with the interim use of canoeing and kayaking. And Kat Campbell, we have some great kayaking weather on the horizon here. It's 80 degrees. I love it.
I know. It's going to be great weather this weekend. The water is a little cooler, but maybe if you have a boat that hasn't been winterized, a great weekend to head out on Lake Gaston, Jordan Lake, one of our area lakes. 86 tomorrow and Sunday. Both of those days would tie or break records. So this is significant warmth for us, but all this comes crashing down as we head into Halloween. That's when temperatures begin to cool, and we are seeing a wetter trend for Halloween again. We've been telling you all week that we have that small chance for rain. We're starting to get a better feel for it. The European model, pretty consistent, and I'll show that to you in a moment. But here's the cold front. Right now, high pressure in our ridge of high pressure in the upper levels of the atmosphere are protecting us from the clouds and the rain associated with that system. But we see it begin to change as we head into early next week. Monday is going to be our last warm day with temperatures in the mid-80s before our cold front pushes in Tuesday. Now, notice I paused this Tuesday at 6 o'clock. We don't yet have the real hour-by-hour high-resolution model data in yet. But at 6 o'clock and Tuesday evening, the heavier rain is off to our west. So it may be a situation where you want to try to head out early. Just check in for updates as the high-resolution data comes in over the weekend. That's when we can really pinpoint the hour-by-hour timing. 11 o'clock, we have a better chance for rain. And then as we head into the overnight hours and early Wednesday, there could be some lingering showers. And perhaps up in the northeast, this could mix with a few Halloween night snowflakes to play a real trick on folks up there. We'll be watching that closely. For us, the Arctic air moves in behind it. We're talking about frost and freeze potential. I want to bring this up early. I know it's almost a week away, but anybody with agricultural interests, gardening interests, anything like that, you'll want to be aware of this starting Thursday morning. And then again on Friday, we're going to have the threat of a frost and a freeze across the area. 30 in Roxborough, not out of the question that you could be in the upper 20s, though, like South Hill. 32 in Durham, 34 Raleigh, 32 in Southern Pines. Outside tonight at the Whirligig Park in Wilson, a nice mild evening. If you are headed out and about, temperatures by 9 o'clock are even going to be near 70, and by 11 o'clock tonight in the mid-60s. 3 days in a row of the warmth ahead. 86, 3 days in a row to close out the month of October, but it is a chilly start to November. 54 Wednesday, 56 on Thursday, and here are those lows I was telling you about. 34 Thursday morning, even down to 33 Friday morning. The chill will be coming right back.
Yeah, we knew it. All right, thanks, Kat. A number of electrical co-op workers participate in a high energy competition in Nash County.
Coming up, why this was more than just a game for these line workers. Chatham County is celebrating the opening of its new Emergency Operations Center, designed to meet the growing county's needs. The new facility is on Innovation Way off US 64 in Pittsboro. There was a ribbon cutting this morning. The county says it includes more workstations in the 911 center, enhanced technology and data infrastructure, and amenities to help employees disconnect from their high-stress environment.
The Alzheimer's Association's Walk to End Alzheimer's is happening tomorrow morning at Seeger Stadium in Fayetteville. The opening ceremony will be at 10 a.m. The walk gets started 30 minutes later at 10:30. WRAL is a proud community partner of this event, and our Gilbert Bays will be down there serving as the MC. Go say hi to Gilbert. You can find out more about this walk by going to WRAL.com and searching Out and About. North Carolina's electric cooperatives hosted a competition.
This is really interesting.
It
25
is.
Electric co-op line workers demonstrated their life-saving skills. Competitors had to rescue an unconscious worker atop a utility pole dressed in climbing gear and perform CPR. The co-ops hold this competition every 2 years. This one happened at Nash Community College. It ensures line workers certification for co-op power line work. Cody Buck of Brunswick Electric placed third. Austin Story of Blue Ridge Energy came in second. And Cameron Clark of Lumbee River EMC took first place. Congratulations to all three and to all the line workers for
exactly.
what they do.
How incredible are these guys? Did
I
you
know.
See him flying up the
Whoa,
pole?
He went
then
so
they're
fast.
Saving people's lives. They're always responding in the worst possible weather and keeping the power on.
I know.
Thank you. Thank you to all of you. And thank you for joining us tonight here on WRAL News.
Our next newscast is at 10 on Fox 50 and 11 on WRAL. Have a great weekend.
Keep watching WRAL News over the Air Channel 34 and Spectrum Channel 1257.